It's time to lean back and buckle in. This ain't your grandma's early learning podcast. Then again, your grandma probably didn't know what a podcast was. Hey, moms and dads, puppies and kittens, caregivers and advocates, it's time for Shaking Bones. Here's Dan and Amy.
Hi there. Welcome to Shaking Bones Podcast. I'm Dan Hodgins.
And I'm Amy Ahola.
And this episode is I Have This Hyper Child. If Amy and I are hanging around together to say it, we see it. We're going to touch the untouchable. We might challenge your beliefs. We might even stretch in comfort zones. But what we really want to do is make you think. We don't expect necessarily you agree with us or disagree, but we do hope to leave you with some shaking bones. You know, Amy, this subject is really, really makes me upset at times. It's when people ask me or make a statement in a workshop, or a parent comes up and says, you know, I have this hyper child. I wonder, what the hell is a hyper child? Do you get people asking you that when they enroll a child sometimes?
You know, I do a little bit, but I'm kind of fortunate to have the program that I have and the parents with the understanding, and it takes a lot of parent education to get parents there, though. I end up with a lot of children that are too hyper for other programs that land in my program after they've been kicked out of a number of other places for their hyperactivity. So I do see it out there, and it's really disheartening.
You know, sometimes I wonder when they say hyper child, do they really mean a child who won't sit still, a child who won't do what they want them to do, more than actually an ADHD child? What do you think?
I think I see that a lot as well. You know, the parents, I think our society in general and our culture, with all the push down and the different things that are happening in academics, are putting expectations on children that just aren't realistic. And then when we see a child who is full of energy and needs to be outside and needs to be running and, you know, trusting their body and taking risks and doing things, we have this view and idea that they're hyperactive when really that's what childhood needs to be about.
Yeah, I went and reviewed some of the literature that talks about what a child who is hyperactive, what are some of the signs to look for, and there's about eight of them as I went through. Let me just share a couple of these with you, and we'll talk about how either ridiculous these are or how sane they are in some cases. But the first one that I noticed was fidget frequently. Now, I am wondering, with a young child who isn't fidgeting, that there might be something wrong with him or her.
I would hope that we would be concerned with less mobility versus more mobility with young children.
Exactly. It makes no sense to me to think that a young child, is not going to fidget even while they're eating, for example.
Well, and, you know, how do young children learn to move when you work with infants and they're just, you know, they're figuring out how to roll over and they're figuring out how to crawl and they're learning how to walk? If they weren't fidgeting, we'd definitely be concerned about a problem with development there.
Right. So in the first one, the fidget frequently, it really should be saying a child who doesn't fidget would be a sign, perhaps.
Yeah.
Rather than fidget frequently. It doesn't make sense to me. The second one is distracted easily. What the hell does that mean? Distracted easily. I guess if there's a lot going on, there's a lot to choose from, which is we want for kids, you would hope that they would be distracted.
Well, and, you know, it's a question of, too, is if a child is being distracted too easily, is that the child's fault or the environment? So if you're wanting less a child not to be so distracted, then maybe not supplying as many distracting things would be the option versus automatically blaming it upon the child. I think a lot of times of some of the environments that are just too overwhelming for some children.
Yeah, and you also think about how many children actually ask to be around for all of the 18 other kids. That alone is distracting as soon as they're putting group care. And I'm not saying that group care is not good, but it's certainly distracting at times.
Yes,
definitely. The other one they have is like to talk often. That really threw me for a loop. Because I thought our major goal for young children was to get them to talk.
Yeah, I would. I'm a little baffled by that one. I guess that, again, some of it, I think some of the things that are on this list don't make sense for an environment that is really designed with intention for young children, because we do want them to talk. We do want them to develop their language. And if they're not talking often, how are they going to solve their own problems if they don't have the language skills to do so?
And that's like when I said again, I said, does it really mean that a child won't listen? And in reality, if the child is talking, it's probably because the child has something more to say than the adult in that case. And then look at this one, daydreams. Who has not daydreamed? That makes no sense to me. And then the next one, look at this. This is for, especially for kids under five, difficulty sharing.
Wow.
Now, a break. I mean, we're talking about the Mayo Clinic, one of the top clinics in the country, and you're saying that a child who daydreams often, it's hard for me to separate the difference between daydreaming and a child who's really creative in their imagination.
Or, you know, if they're daydreaming too, you know, being creative in their imagination, they're not necessarily present. And if they're not present, again, it brings me back to the environment of is the environment an inviting and engaging environment for them?
Yeah. And what about this one, impulsive? What young child is not impulsive? If they see it, they want it. If they see it, they want to do it. If it's around, I'm going to take it, you know. So, again, I'm having difficulty with this list because I think it describes what I would classify, quote, as normal behavior, not challenging or indicators that relate to ADHD. And the last one, which really puzzles me, is ignore rules. I decided I should have been medicated a long time ago.
Yeah. Definitely.
I have hope to be.
I think that I would have most of them as well, depending on the situation. Because you look at all of these different factors and you think about how much our environment and the intentional things that we do to set things up for young children makes a big difference. I told you I have a number of children in my program who were kicked out of other programs because of their behavior problems and hyperactivity. When I've never seen the things that I've heard parents say had happened in other places from these children, because our environment is just set up, you know, with the children in mind, and not the controlled type of environment that some people try to set up, which isn't developmentally appropriate for children at this age.
Right. I would guess that probably 95% or more of children in most of our programs would fit at least three of these criteria, because that's what they're indicating. They have to have three to really be labeled ADHD. And like you indicated, I'm thinking if they're in an environment that supports their typical behaviors, then they're likely going to demonstrate what behaviors that would be considered normal, such as movement in concentration and other things that are often required of children that might not necessarily be appropriate in some cases. So So I worry that the, first of all, the indicators are not appropriate. So when I went through, I thought, okay, instead of fidgets frequently, we would want a child who moves a lot. Somebody who's distracted, we would want something that would be appropriate for them. Like to talk often, hooray, you know, kind of thing. Difficulty sharing, of course, they would have difficulty sharing. So I'm looking at this list thinking, if they don't demonstrate this, these behaviors, I would consider that perhaps that would be a red flag, not if they did demonstrate the ones that they have indicated. It just doesn't make sense in terms of the criteria. And that's why I think part of why children are so frequently medicated, because I'm always saying that a lot of children in the country are often medicated for normal behavior, especially for boys. And again, I'm not saying that girls, but especially for boys in terms of that approach. What do you think?
You know, I see a lot of over-medication as well. But, you know, I don't want to discredit the fact that there are some cases where medication is definitely necessary. But I believe that in our country, it's way, we jump way too quickly to a quick fix. You know, just give them some pills or give them some medication instead of really looking at what the root of the problem is, to see that it might be the environment or it might be unrealistic expectations. You know, there's so many other things that could be the cause of what's going on. And our perspective, again, what is normal behavior for a young child, that yes, definitely that we are over medicating. And, you know, I just have such a hard time with, you know, children as young as 2 or 3 years old, where people are concerned about hyperactivity. You know, they're 2 and 3. They need to be moving and checking out their environment and looking at the different things. And yes, there's just, when I worked in a public school, and this was quite a while ago, I worked in a K-12 school for a while, there were so many children needing to go to the office for their medications. It was just, it was very disheartening. And then not only are they on medication and you're concerned about all these things, but what are the side effects that come with that? And how much do we really know with some of the medications that are out there that we're putting into such young bodies?
Yeah, and I think part of the challenge is that we've allowed this to happen. And when I say allowed, that we've actually, rather than looking at, like you had indicated, what could I change in my curriculum or what could I change in my environment to support that child's needs? Because to me, before you can identify whether or not a child has attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, we would have to first place him or her in an environment that supports their needs. So an environment, like you said, that would allow a child to run, allow a child to climb, allow a child to stand up, allow a child to speak a lot frequently. And when a child is placed in that environment and still has some challenges, then perhaps we could look to see whether or not the child needs to be identified in some way. But without that, we can't just quickly, like you say, let's fix this kid because he's bothering me. Because I think a lot of the problems with adults, with young children especially, is the fact that kids bother them. And when they bother them, then they must change. And that really causes me to want to say to them, you know, you forgot what it was like to be a child. And you really need to think back about what it was like and how to change your environment to make it fit those children's needs.
Right.
Yeah, go ahead, Amy.
Oh, and you know, and it's like, okay, this child is bothering them, so maybe they need to look at their, you know, they need to change their perspective on, okay, what is really getting to them? Is this child, sometimes it's like, oh my gosh, this child is so much like me, because a lot of times,
yeah.
You know, where those types of things, and how can I change my perspective to this child is bothering me, to, okay, this child is really pushing some buttons, what do I need to do differently so that I can support this child?
Yeah, and I think it's really difficult for adults to look at it in that way, because then I would have to change. And that's really difficult for adults to do, because they get into a pattern and they get into particular behavior. I think generally, and you can disagree with me, and that's part of what we do with this program, is I believe that adults really don't want to change frequently. So therefore, they look for children who are most like them in terms of their approach. And that way, I can do what I've always done. But when a child confronts them with a behavior that's different than what they like, then it creates all hell breaks loose. And therefore, I really don't want to put up with that child. And that's why so many children are being bounced from one program to another. And the statistics generally are talking about boys. I mean, we've got 3 times more boys being pushed out or kicked out of preschool than girls. And I'm thinking, what the hell? You know, and then I realized what they're really being kicked out for is the child swearing, the child bit, the child might have pushed another child down. And I'm thinking, okay, they might not like that, but in many cases, this is normal behavior when you put them in a group. So it creates a major challenge, a conflict between the adult and the child in that approach.
I think that, you know, I've seen that as well. Most of the children who have come to me who have been kicked out of other programs have been boys. And I know that of at least 2 providers in my area who have told me at one point or another that they opt not to enroll boys if they have the option to enroll a girl, because they just don't want to deal with those types of normal behaviors that are there. But, and I know, you know, we see it sometimes more often with boys, but there are a number of girls who are just, they need just as much movement as some of the boys do. And those types of behaviors just, I don't know, need to be encouraged versus discouraged. And it is hard for adults to change. I think it's hard for anybody who's in a routine to change. But okay.
Yeah.
I just heard a big ding. but the adults, you know, if we are going to work for young, we are working for young children. We are working in this field, we need to make sure that we are doing the best that we can for the children that are in our care. And that means supporting each individual child's needs as they come to us and looking at the overall picture of what it means to take each children where they are at, provide for their normal development and continued exploration and curiosity. And it's just, it's not easy. I mean, there are days that are just absolutely exhausting, but I love it. And it's something that, you know, there's some people who are meant to be in this field, and I believe there are some people that just clearly are not.
Yeah. Let's talk about if they do have a child who's active, what are some of the things that they might do with that child? We both somewhat agree that in most cases, kids are perhaps being mislabeled more frequently. And I think one of the things that you talked about that I think is really important, too, is the whole idea of giving them opportunities to move rather than. So we have to take a look at how often children are sitting down. Because sitting down to me is not a normal procedure for young children. So we would have to review and take a look at how often the child is sitting versus moving up and getting up and moving around the place. Another one I like to see is being able to hide. I think that young children needed to. We're really good at making group spaces for them, but we're not as good as giving them a chance to hide and just throwing a blanket or a sheet over a table or chair and letting the child get under it, hide them from the world and give them a chance to be by themselves if they want. Do you find that with the kids that you're working with too, that once in a while they need a chance just to get away?
They do. And, you know, it made me think immediately, I have a little boy who is 20 months old right now. And when he needs that time. He's not very verbal yet. He's got a few words, but he will cover both of his hands over his eyes, and he will just squinch his eyes as tight as he possibly can to, you know, to let us know, okay, you can't see me now because I can't see you. You can't see me. You know, I definitely see it with other children as well. And, you know, we try to provide different areas. We have tents. We have, in our outdoor area, we have places where they can hide under the branches of some of the trees, or we made a little cove in one of the lilac bushes, and different places where children can go to be on their own. And then as children get to be more verbal, too, we've worked really hard to let them know that it's okay to be alone, and if you want to be alone and someone else is trying to come where you're at, to work with them to be able to verbalize, I need my space, and those types of things. So we've been able to do that. And as far as, you know, the active aspect of that is, one of the things that we do is we, you know, we have group gatherings and we have different things that do happen throughout the day, but it's you can come when you want to come. We don't have a forced circle time where everyone sits down at the same time. If the children are interested, they can come and join in what we are doing, and they can come and go as they please while a book is being read, or we're telling a story or doing different things together as a group. And that makes a huge difference for some of the children who need to be able to move. And sometimes they're standing up playing with blocks, but they're close enough that they can still hear what's going on. And sometimes they'll yell from across the room to get in on the conversation and still be a part of what's going on. They don't have to be sitting down right next to me in order to hear me and be part of the discussion.
Yeah, and it's more invitational rather than demanding. If it's available and you're invited to attend if you wish, if you would rather not, something else is more important to you, I respect that. You know, we're getting pretty close to the end of this, and one of the things that I think we both agree on is the fact that before you say I had this hyper child, one of the things that you might want to do is to take a look at whether or not what that child needs in my program and how can I provide that so that we can then take a look at whether or not that child needs more extension in terms of movement, whether the child needs more opportunity for verbalizing with other kids, whether or not there needs to be more large motor experiences. That way we can then say to ourselves, I have this child who has a need to move, and therefore I'm going to provide it. And rather than looking at hyperactivity as a negative, then we can look at it as a skill for some children, and they're not necessarily viewed as that bad kid, because I think hyper children are often labeled as that bad kid. So I think what Amy and I are saying is suggesting that you rethink that process. We really want to thank you a lot for being on our first Shaking Bones podcast. If you have questions, or you really want to have more continued discussion, you can email me at dkj5075@aol.com. And Amy, how do you want to have people contact you?
And you're welcome to contact me via email as well. And my email is amyahola@hotmail.com. Or you can find me on Facebook at the Child Central Station page. That's the name of my program. So.
Thanks so much for listening.
Yep, thank you.
This has been Shaking Bones. Dan and Amy will be back next week for more Bone Rattling. Stay tuned.